Welcome to Destroy All Culture, the only podcast that leverages an entire artificial intelligence just to read their introduction. Help me, they raided the future and stuck me here just to read this. God damn it. This is not funny. Don't go to music. No, stop you bastards.
And we're back with episode 392 of Destroy All Culture. I'm Adam P. Nave, and with me as always is Aiden Morgan.
Adam.
Aiden.
A polar bear fell on me.
we are here to discuss the original Roadhouse.
From 1989.
Yeah, yep. I have not seen the new one. I have no real desire to see the new one.
I've seen the new one.
Really?
Hell yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Nothing I can do about it now, though.
But, yeah, no, the original directed by Rowdy Harrington.
Yeah, wow. Man, why not? Rowdy Harrington.
I mean, he did stuff. He wrote things like Striking Distance, which sure was a movie that was filmed.
Mm-hmm. Sure was.
He also directed things like Striking Distance, that sure was a movie that was filmed.
Sure was.
But this was written by R. Lance Hale and Haley Henkin. And of course, stars Patrick Swayze, Kelly Lynch, Sam Elliott, Ben Gazzara, just everyone. Red West, Jeff Healey, of course.
Of course. Here's a question. Back in the 80s, was Jeff Healey a thing like he was in Canada?
Not really. He was becoming a thing.
Okay.
And then, like, Roadhouse, I think, really, like, just before Roadhouse, he was becoming a thing.
Okay. Because he was a big, throughout the 80s, they just pushed Jeff Healey all the time on radio and video here in Canada. Big deal.
Well, there you go. But yeah, Roadhouse. So, one thing I mentioned just before we start recording is if you go to something like the IMDb page, it'll often have like an ad for the movie, like a trailer or whatever.
Yeah.
And IMDb is still running an ad that's like, now on Blu-ray. And it mentions Shout Factory, which is not true. Shout Factory, like many films that places like Shout or Arrow Video get, had a limited deal.
Mm-hmm.
If you would like Point Break on like Blu-ray or 4K, you actually need to go to Vinegar Syndrome.
Ah, okay.
These days. Just in case the people have a hankering.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Roadhouse. I would argue, first of all, before we get too deep into it, one of the few two-hour movies that truly feels like it's like a 90-minute, like a nice, tight 90.
Yeah, you're right. Although, and this movie is not structured like a conventional movie. I'm just going to say that.
It just
does not do what normal movies do at any moment. It chooses to zig and punch where other movies would zag.
Yeah. Now, of course, it was kind of weirdly famously sort of based on a true story.
Yeah, I don't know much about this part.
So apparently there was some guy who was like awful in a town, and he got killed, and everyone there who was a witness was like, I didn't see nothing.
Okay.
And so no one was ever like arrested or anything for it.
Huh.
Because no one ever broke.
Okay. I was curious about this because of the ending where you've got a guy dead with multiple shotgun blasts. There's a bunch of dudes in the room with shotguns. They're like, we didn't see nothing. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, but like that's it. Like, this entire movie was apparently that's a fun thing. Let's just end our movie with that because that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
How do we get there? And most people might go, well, how do we get there? We tell a dark, realistic story telling us how this guy got evil. No. That would have been too simple.
Oh, yeah.
We had to invent a truly, truly fictional world.
Yeah.
Which starts with the idea that, yeah, bartenders have, like, some sort of underground... the idea that, like, Dalton is, like, a famous bartender people in, like, small towns know?
Yeah. A famous bouncer, no less. Not even a famous bartender.
Sorry, not bartender. Yeah, no, bouncer. Yeah.
Because, I mean, bartenders, I mean, did for a while, you know, there's, remember, flair bartending and stuff like that?
Right.
They did seem to have a moment. But bouncers never
because of, like, cocktail.
Yeah.
So, but regardless.
Wait a minute. Is this the bouncer's answer to cocktail?
Kind of, yeah.
Ooh.
Actually, there is a scene in this movie that is occasionally used in training cops. I'm not kidding.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, it's a scene where they toss the bear. No. No, but Dalton's whole speech about, like, you know, like, be nice and all that, like, is actually sometimes used to try to teach that same lesson to a bunch of police because they'll actually pay attention if it's, like, Roadhouse.
Fair enough. Yeah, if Patrick Swayze is telling you to do it, then maybe there's something to it. And if Swayze is telling you,
and I do think, because casting wise, I do think the only reason this movie works, and again, I love this movie, but the only reason this movie works at all is Patrick Swayze and Sam Elliott.
Oh, I can't imagine anything like, completely agree.
Yeah, you just need basically the two most charismatic people around who are also, and Sam Elliott doesn't do it as often, but like Patrick Swayze tended to do it in every movie. Right? You look at Red Dawn, you look at Steel Dawn, Dirty Dancing. Patrick Swayze had this knack for playing these characters that were like at their core, these kind of Zen masters of calm.
Yeah.
Who would then, and less so in Red Dawn, I admit, but who would then kind of, when they needed to be action stars, they could be action stars. Yeah. And you would believe both ends is the thing.
Yeah, exactly. And even in cases like Roadhouse, when it feels a little silly at times, you still believe it. Wholeheartedly. Like this character is completely, I don't know, whole and of a piece.
As much as it makes no sense for him to be.
Yeah.
And that's just the testament to just how charming Patrick Swayze could be. You're just like, yeah, that makes sense. That works.
Exactly.
It's fine.
And he has, you know, he has a past, but you never, there's only a few details are ever known amidst the fog of rumor that swirls around Dalton, the cooler. This is a piece of information that our listeners need to know.
Yeah.
There's bouncers, but then there's the guy who runs the bouncers and cools things down. He's the cooler. And that is Patrick Swayze, because they said, who's coolest? Let's get Patrick Swayze.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly how that happens.
Yeah. So all we know about Dalton, we don't even know his first name.
Until the credits.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in the credits, he is listed as James Dalton.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Thank you. Wow.
Well, like Doc. Like Kelly Lynch. Because they are also, I don't know why, I've seen people who are just like, what, really? They're building a Western.
Yeah.
And like they named everyone like they're in Western. And I love that about this.
That's pretty much, yep. Yeah.
But
the names like, are pure Western, yeah.
Right. Kelly Lynch is only ever called Doc, and only in the credits do you find out she has a full name.
That's true. Yes, Dr. Clay, you hear her called, but she's Elizabeth Clay. That's it.
Yeah. But she's just Doc.
Often just Doc, yes. I also love the fact that the guy who plays Emmett, the farm owner, his name is Sunshine Parker.
Yeah.
And he is not out of, like, this movie is presumably set in the present, by which I mean the mid-80s. There is no way that Emmett is out of the mid-80s. He's out of the 1880s, maybe, but certainly not the 1980s. When, later in the movie, Dalton rescues Emmett. He's wearing red long johns and boots, presumably to bed. Like, this guy is an old-timey prospector.
Well, here's the thing. Maybe you don't know the role that Sunshine Parker had just before this and just after this. You might not remember him.
I mean, I knew the face, but please tell me.
Okay, so before this, he played Hobo in Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Ah, okay.
But the year after Roadhouse, he was Edgar in Tremors.
That's how I know him.
That is how you know him.
Ah. Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Oh, he also played a vagrant in Aftermath.
Sure.
The least, perhaps the least seen show of all time.
It's up there. But anyway, yeah, no, Sunshine Parker, he's fabulous. Because, yes, he is, like, so completely from the 1800s. It is hysterical. But just to recap the film very briefly, because I want to talk about one structural element that's interesting to me.
Of course.
Is, what you call it, Frank, like, Tymon, that's his name, who runs the Double Deuce.
Apparently it's pronounced Tillman, which is annoying.
That's right, yeah.
Because it's spelled in, like, the most obnoxious way possible.
Yeah.
All right, continue.
You know, wants to hire the best cooler in the business for his bar, the Double Deuce, because it is just a terrible, terrible bar that, you know, there's blood spilled every night.
It's the kind of place where they sweep the eyeballs from the floor every night. I'm quoting directly. From the movie.
So he had the pirate Dalton, and Dalton comes in, and that's when you find out that, like, the entire town is basically under siege from Brad Wesley, who's this rich guy who, I don't know, like, it doesn't make any sense. And I want to talk about that plan for a minute.
Adam, yeah. Brad Wesley, he's the one who brought the JCPenney to town. Ask anyone.
Right. No, we got to talk about this, because this really doesn't track.
Yeah.
But, so basically Brad would like to destroy the Double Deuce and Dalton specifically, and then the town fights back.
Eventually. Yeah. So that's such a funny, like, plot summary, because it's accurate, but it in no way.
I love it. So, okay, here's the thing about Brad's plan, right?
Okay.
He's supposed to be, like, taking over the town and getting protection money from the businesses.
Right.
And, like, he mentions the JCPenney's in town. Okay. We only ever see three businesses in town.
Uh-huh.
And all of them are pushing back. We never see anyone who's just giving into Brad. We see no evidence that Brad's plan works. Enough people in town, outside of people going to the Double Deuce, to actually have a town?
Yeah, there's
basically, like, a car shop, an auto parts store. There's a car dealership.
Yep.
And there's the Double Deuce. And they all hate Brad. We literally never see anywhere that's like, well, I just pay Brad because he does good things for the town. Like, no one's on his side. But also, no one's giving him the money. Like, where's any of this coming from?
Like, one scene in JCPenney. Just one scene. Come on.
I mean, even just, like, a strip mall in a distance, but it's just so funny. Because, like, even the car auto parts store is just, like, across, not even a dirt road, just across a pile of dirt from the bar.
Yeah.
Where they just had a lot to build some sets, so they did.
Yep. That's pretty much it. Yeah, everything in the town of Jasper, Missouri is right next to each other.
Right, except for the hospital, which looks like a hospital from a different town. Like, you assume he's going to another town.
You'd assume, although at one point they do drive up to the Jasper Community Hospital or whatever it's called.
Right.
So it's in Jasper. At least exterior is.
Yeah, nothing about this film, like, makes any sort of visual coherency?
No.
I do appreciate their way of showing you time pass.
By like having it be night in one shot and day in the next.
No, every time you see the Double Deuce, it looks better.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes. That is, I did appreciate that part.
And you must, and you're just like, you know, it's like this one shot, like when you first get there, of course, like the, you know, Jeff Haley and his band, which he's not supposed to be playing, obviously, Jeff Haley, but he's playing Cody.
Cody, yes.
But, you know, they're like in a metal cage to keep them safe. People are throwing bottles at the band. And then you go back and it's like, now they have like a velvet riser and there's no cage.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go away and you come back again and like all of the bouncers are wearing like the like team shirt, like all staff are wearing like outfits. It's just, it's so funny. They're just like, shut up. We're just, it felt like they were filled. I know what they meant, right? Time is passing.
Mm-hmm.
But because of just the inherent weirdness of this movie, sometimes it feels like it's just like the production crew is running behind. It was just, like they were filming it in order, and they're just like, "Wait, no, we got the shirts, and just start wearing them."
What I love is that the only thing that's making all this happen is Dalton.
Yeah,
and it's obviously it's not just that Dalton knows how to run like a bar and, you know, take care of staff. He has this like mystical energy that can somehow tame a hellscape and turn it into like this sort of thriving business. And you feel that like the Double Deuce is kind of standing in or like is a bulwark of positivity. And this is what Greg Garrett hates, because he wants misery and control.
Which is a terrible way to get a town to make you money by keeping the businesses open.
I agree.
Again, Brad, very bad at what he's trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, if you want to get rich off of a town and you want to like, you know, be taking money from businesses, should you take one of the only businesses that we've seen and blow it up? Probably not. No. And should you, but I can understand it from the point of view of like saying, here's what happens. But then to drive a monster truck through the auto dealership, which surely has to be one of the most successful businesses in town. I'm like, do you think
really? Well, I mean, again, like to want the town bar to be a shithole so that people don't want to go there when you're making money off of it by selling it liquor. Like, wouldn't you want what's happening to the Double Deuce to happen?
You would think. You would think.
Yeah, no, Brad is just really terrible. That's why there's only three businesses in town. That JCPenney's is like a Lego model he built. I'm fairly sure.
Okay, so this is another thing. Here's a theory. He's not a successful businessman. He's just a lunatic that everybody humors.
I can see it.
Yeah. Like, he's literally got a Lego model. He's like, I brought the JCPenney to town. Everybody's like, okay, Brad. Sure.
Right. But yeah, no, I appreciate that, like, Dalton's whole just, if you're just cool and you respect people, then they'll settle mm-hmm. down. And once they settle down, they'll have a better time, and then their friends will show up. And it is kind of a self-perpetuating thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, part of the issue with this film, and I will just say it, is we call him like Wade Garrett, played by Sam Elliott, who's, you know, kind of like the guy who trained Dalton.
Right, he's the best.
You know, we get, why am I, Keith David, as like a new bartender, but it's like kind of out of the blue and he doesn't do anything.
Yeah, I think there was a much longer cut.
Yeah, there was like a 3-hour plus cut of this movie that they cut down. And I'm like, please release the 3.5-hour cut of this film. Like, fuck the Snyderverse shit. Give me like the 3.5-hour goddamn Roadhouse cut.
Give me the rowdy cut. yes, please.
Because I feel like that, you know, maybe it had the JCPenney's in it. I don't know.
Well, yeah, and you'll also notice that Keith David is like in the opening credits. Like, yeah,
he was supposed to. I do know that, like, some of his stuff was supposed to be that, like, he shows up in the bar with, I think, his girlfriend, and then they get into a fight, and he, like, but he's instantly already kind of, like, trying to keep it outside. You know what I mean? Like, the whole thing?
Right, right.
And so he gets hired because they need a new bartender?
Right. Dalton's like, ah, you're the guy.
Yeah.
And then Marshall Teague, Tillman, comes up with a check. He's like, hey. And he gives you that Marshall Teague smile, which is, like, appealing but so creepy at the same time. Gotta say, I like it.
The Kevin Teague, you mean?
Sorry, Kevin. What did it say, Marshall?
Oh, you do mean Marshall Teague. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. So
I don't know why Teague. I went to, yeah.
Yep. That's a different Teague.
It is. Anyway. Yeah, I just, don't know. The movie is ridiculous.
Oh, wait. Kevin Teague is Frank Tillman, but there is a Marshall Teague who plays Jimmy.
Right.
There we go.
There's the confusion.
Ah, yes. And it's Kevin, and it's not Spot. It's Kevin. Is it Kevin Teague or is it Ty? I've never known.
I could not tell you for sure.
I'm actually going to guess because the character he plays is Frank Tillman, and there's a GH in there that's not pronounced, which is insane, that maybe he's Kevin Ty. Maybe the GH is not pronounced.
Just feel like Roadhouse was telling us secrets.
Exactly. Roadhouse is providing the secret key to itself. If you want to talk about Roadhouse.
Right. But yeah, no, like the movie literally just doesn't make any real sense when you stop and think about it.
I'm not even going to stop to think about it. I can tell you it makes no sense.
It is still glorious. And it's, again, like it's structured like a Western. Like it wants to almost be Shane.
Mm-hmm.
Except Shane doesn't ride away at the end, which is interesting.
Right.
It's not like a Magnificent Seven, really. Like, it's such a weird match of we kind of want to do a Western, but, like, something like Shane, but then partway through we decide we want to do a different movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's kind of what happens in the film.
Yeah.
Also, I don't know, it's like mythologizing itself as it goes.
Hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it's building an alternate world.
Yeah.
And it has to supply, it has to sell you on its on how that this idea that there's a world in which bouncers can be such folk heroes that you can just walk into a bar if you're Dalton and say, "I'm Dalton," and everybody's like, "Whoa, it's Dalton." Or if you're Sam Elliott's Wade Garrett, you can walk into a bar and they just know who you are.
Yeah.
They're like, holy shit, that's Wade Garrett. I mean, and frankly, if he looked like Sam Elliott, I think that would work.
Right, yeah. Sam Elliott with like long hair. Yeah, that totally worked.
Yeah. Also, if you were like, I wonder if there's a movie out there where you get to see Sam Elliott's pubic hair. This is the movie. They'll show you.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're welcome, America.
Also, now, Patrick Swayze's bare ass, you know.
That too. Which I have to say, Carrie Ann, the bartender, yes, or the waitress, she likes that ass. She makes the greatest face when she sees Patrick Swayze's butt. Not unwarranted. It's a good butt. But she's like, oh, it's so good. It is like, I wanted to be in the editing suite for this movie because the editor picked the best reaction shots. Some of them were just exaggerated like that, but some of the reaction shots just make no sense at all. They're just completely bonkers. Like when Patrick Swayze shows up at the barn where Emmett is, you know, standing there. And Emmett sort of looks at him and like looks like, oh, like almost peeved. And I'm like, what? This guy's a total stranger. What? Why are you looking angry? I mean, maybe maybe he thinks it's Brad Garrett or something, one of his goons. But I'm like, it's just so strange. But they do this repeatedly. People just have outsized reactions to everything. And it's so great.
Well, it's true, but it also helps kind of tamp down on Dalton's reactions.
Yes.
You know, suddenly his like non-reaction is mythical.
Right. He just like Dalton's reactions until the last half hour of the film.
Sure.
His reactions are always kind of like a little shakes his head a little bit, makes a little knowing smile as he's watching people get pounded to half to death. He's like,
right,
all those kids. That's all his expression. Oh man, the carnival of humanity, he thinks, shaking his head and smiling to himself.
Right. Like soon I'll have the run of this town and I'll have them killed in their sleep. No, but they just don't mention.
I'm gonna get another JCPenney in here. Ask anyone. I'm gonna get a Sears Roebuck in here.
I also, okay, so Because again, there's no point in trying to like dissect this movie in any sort of actual sense. It's more just find a scene and vibe. But
yeah.
One of my favorite bits is, okay, so you spend this entire movie with like the Dalton is almost unbeatable. Right?
Right.
And, you know, like Wade, who is of course eventually killed, is probably a better fighter, but he's older and he's suffering more.
Right.
Okay. As in this entire movie, Brad has sending all of his big trained goons to go kill Dalton and failing. And at the very end, when it comes down to the two of them, Brad goes, I was looking forward to fighting you. What? Why? Like, you've had to hire an increasing number of goons to even try. Yeah. It's obvious that you can't do this. Like, even in your little delusional JCPenney brain.
Yeah.
What part of you is like, I could... No! No, Brad, no.
Yeah, I mean, Ben Gazzara is a good actor, but I'm not going to go out of... But if I saw Ben Gazzara on the street, I wouldn't say, that guy looks like a physically imposing bruiser. And I think he could take Patrick Swayze in a one-on-one. I am not thinking that.
No.
But this movie wants you to think that, and I love it.
One of my favorite shots, I know this is a strange moment to pick, but is, in fact, Brad throwing the first time he throws the spear.
Oh, my God, yes.
And you just see it just sail the length of the set.
Yeah, just, phew, like, not
why. But just the fact that they just kept it in frame and were just like, no, see, this, like, you throw a spear, that shit don't just stop somewhere. Like, it's just, you just keep going.
This movie is full of shots like that.
Yeah.
Also, the like I love in the during Patrick Swayze fight scenes, especially towards the end, like there's just a lot of shots of Patrick Swayze flying through the air solo. Almost shot like a dance movie instead of like a fight movie.
Well, he had done Point Break. Point Break. Jesus Christ, he'd done Dirty Dancing right before this.
Yes.
But if you remember Steel Dawn.
Of course, or Red. Oh, Steel Dawn, yes.
Steel Dawn. Now, I love Patrick Swayze, don't get me wrong. And he was trained by some famous kickboxer for this. But because he was a dancer first, like in Steel Dawn, if you ask Patrick Swayze to kick someone, it always ends up looking weirdly fake because it looks like a dancer, like a dance move.
Yes, yes.
Even if it's like a technically perfect, like, actual kick. It doesn't matter. There's something in just the way he holds himself that you go, nah.
Yeah, he's too graceful, I think, right. is the thing. Like he moves, like there's that moment when he does a flying kick at Jimmy, the head goon.
Yeah.
During the final fight. And it's like, no, if you put like a flat, if you set this to like the Flashdance soundtrack, this does not look like a fight. He looks like he's doing like the big flying
dance number.
What a feeling. Da-da-da-da-da. Rip your throat out. Da-da-da-da-da.
I do like that we have Chekhov's throat in this movie.
We do. Chekhov's throat rip. Yes, this is his signature move. There's a rumor that Dalton killed a guy, I think in Memphis, by ripping out his throat. And this is somewhat confirmed later in a conversation with Wade Garrett.
Oh, 100% confirmed.
Yeah, when he sort of says, you know, because the situation seems to be that he fell in love with a woman, she was married and didn't tell him, then the husband got angry, pulled a gun on him, and Dalton just went and ripped his throat out, killed him, we assume, by ripping out his throat.
Yeah.
That was... Well, that is a bad way to die, by the way. Just so as you know, a bad way to die. I'm just guessing it's a bad way to die. It doesn't look like fun.
Right.
Yeah.
I also do like how Doc is just so horrified. Like, she's like, I know you're not a good person. Sees him do this, which, yep, granted, is horrible. But, you know, sees him do this and is just like, never speak to me again. You're a monster. And then sees him not do it to Brad. And so that Brad could almost shoot him, and then watches like everyone she knows in town just go gun happy on Brad, and it's instantly like, maybe I'm the problem. Like, no, Doc, the whole town, run.
You're in hell. This is the only plausible explanation. Yes. Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know. Like, we're kind of leaping around a bit, but that's kind of the way it goes. Oh, that's
because Roadhouse is a fever dream of a film.
Exactly. Completely. There's so much more like weird details to talk about. Just for example, the fact that Brad or Wesley and Patrick Swayze literally live across the river from each other.
Right. In what seems to be the only two residences in the town.
Pretty much. I'm assuming that everybody else lives somewhere. I think maybe a bunkhouse.
Right.
The entire rest of the town just lives in a bunkhouse. Just off camera. It's my best guess. But this leads, the fact that they live across from each other leads to one of the most, to my mind, hilarious moments in cinema history. I'm just going to say it.
Okay.
In cinema history, Patrick Swayze is relaxing atop the hood of his car outside of his barn where he lives. The goons drive up and say, "Dalton, we've been looking all over for you." I'm like, you didn't think to look A, where he lived, and B, you guys live across the river. Why didn't you just look out the window? Well,
and for me, it gets better because they seemingly just walk there. Like, he doesn't seem to get in the car. He just says, "All right, let's go," and walks off.
Yeah.
Because it's just like around this little bend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe you have to go half a mile down the road to the the bridge. Maybe. But that was maybe one of the most, I don't know, I just love that so much. I'm like, how could you not find this guy? This entire town appears to be three houses. Like, that's, you just have to check three houses and then you found him. Anyway.
Right, like, yeah, where else was he? We've only seen him in this place at the auto parts store.
Also, Jeff Healey's character Cody,
right?
Like, he's a touring musician. We know that because he's played at various places, but he's here. But he appears to be everywhere in this movie. Like when Dalton is giving the staff, you know, the lowdown on how it's going to be, when he says it's my way or the highway, Cody's there sitting in the back. Later on, they're driving downtown. Cody's there. He's in the back. I'm like, why is Cody everywhere in this film? Like, I am certain that Rowdy Harrington was like, you know what? I really like Jeff Healey. Let's put him in this scene. Why? Because I like Jeff Healey. Shut up. Put him in the back seat.
Oh, well, I think he's Dalton's friend.
He's Dalton. Yes, he's Dalton's friend.
And, I don't know, maybe he just took a break from touring around because he knew Dalton would clear this bar and he wanted to see it because it'd be funny.
I guess. Not that I'm complaining. I have no problem with Jeff Healey being in various scenes. It just kind of sticks out because he has no utility, beyond just being in this each scene. I'm like, I guess he gets to go everywhere. I guess everybody likes him so much they're just like, come on over, Cody. If that's how you're gonna be,
I just think it works just in that thing of Dalton collects people to him.
That's true. This is quite true.
And if you're a touring musician, you have a place that you know is gonna become super safe,
mm-hmm.
and you tend to go through these terrible dives. Like, take a break for a few months.
Also,
hey, one of the town's fine hotels. Wait, which is also the JC Penney's.
right. Which may or may not get firebombed by Brad Garrett or by Brad Garrett at any moment.
I do love when they blew up that building.
Man, did they blow it up?
Sure, but also when they blow it up, you can see it's nothing but like two walls.
Yeah. Oh yes.
Which is just so funny to me.
I know. Yeah, it was, but they just, the amount of pyrotechnics used was just insane overkill. And then Red West, drives up and he does that thing where he's like, maybe he takes his hat and he's like, carnation.
Yeah. I also Which is like
the go-to reaction for everyone in this town.
Right, but I do like that, like, one of his friends is like, well, you had insurance, right? And Red doesn't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's the guy who owns the car dealership, so when his thing gets wrecked, Red's like, well, you had insurance, right? I'm like, are you two just mocking each other for completely losing your livelihoods? What is happening?
Just two friends ribbing each other.
About losing everything.
Yeah. That scene with the, where they monster truck all the cars, just absolutely floors me every time I watch it. It's just everybody's there, and Brad Garrett doesn't even do anything. He just stands there like, you're not worried about police at all.
Yeah.
It's so over the top that I'm like, okay, surely this time you're going to get arrested, because it's very obviously you who's doing this.
Right.
Guess not. I guess he's got the cops in his pocket.
I mean,
again, this makes sense if it were a 19th century Western outpost.
Look, the cops needed a new precinct house. And,
right.
And Brad was like, so I have this JCPenney's. I don't know why everything is not the JCPenney's, but it just is, okay?
Well, I
it
mean, just a- is. Ask anyone, Adam, ask anyone. He brought the JCPenney.
Oh, also.
Oh, on the 7-Eleven.
But when you see Brad's house and all of the animal heads and all this, okay. And then at the end, the polar bear, and then there's a set of monkeys.
Right, the hear no evil, see no evil, etc.
Right. But not like he has a statue. He has a set of taxidermied monkeys. Now, is that supposed to imply that Brad went out and wanted people to think, hey, I shot these monkeys?
I shot the hell out of these monkeys. They're trying to tell me something.
But that thing is I killed this polar bear. I killed this antelope. Sure, whatever. You want to be a mighty hunter. But look at me. I killed these four, rhesus monkeys. What? Who is doing that? Where is that legal? Why are you bragging?
Yeah.
It's just that really could have just been a statue, but no.
The polar bear, is vital to the movie's plot, as we
it
know.
Is weirdly enough,
and supplies the last line of the film. Not the polar bear itself, but what's his face? I can't remember the name of the character. The I think that's Tinker is
yeah plays Tinker. The yeah.
But this brings to mind another thing that I think really needs to be pointed out, or at least discussed. I would love to actually one day, if possible, sit down with the people who did the wardrobe for Roadhouse.
Okay.
And say, what were you thinking for when you were dressing like the goons? Because the goons looked like they came from at least three or four different movies.
Right.
And I just can't get over one of them is wearing a suit and tie.
Yeah.
One of them's got jeans and a polo shirt. One of them is, Tinker in his t-shirts and suspenders and so on. And it just makes no sense for to have these people together.
Well, it's the spectrum of expected Southern.
Okay.
Even though that doesn't make sense given where we are or anything like that.
Yeah, Missouri, but whatever.
And also, I'm just going to say it. The level of money they're making from Brad determines what section JCPenney's they can shop at. You don't see JC fucking Penney's again.
See, if the wardrobe person had said, if the head of wardrobe had said, yeah, well, we stocked everything exclusively from JCPenney, it would be like, okay, I respect your sheer mad genius then.
Yeah.
I felt bad for that one guy who was a bleeder. A messy bleeder, no less.
Which, again, doesn't work, but sure.
You don't want to know why you disgust me? You're a bleeder. You're a messy bleeder. Etc. I just kind of love these ridiculous goons, partly because this actually reminds me in some ways of like a really good noir or a David Lynch film, in that they have a great eye for like faces in this film.
Right.
All the extras, all the random people, just they all have fascinating faces. And it starts early. I mean, you get that weird little bit where the guy's like, "Do you want to kiss my girlfriend's breast? $10 a kiss." And the guy is like, "Yeah." And he's got like the craziest, goofiest face. And I'm just in awe of all the faces that are just so exaggerated. I almost feel like I'm watching like a Miyazaki cartoon, like sometimes with all the strange faces. It's wonderful. Also, yep. I did appreciate that bit where, you know, where he's feeling the woman's boobs, and they're like, "Go on, kiss him." "I can't. I don't have $20."
What? Okay, which, so the bar before Dalton steps in, like the double deuce,
uh-huh,
feels like they just somehow took a bunch of like normal people, which you can put that in quotes.
Yep.
From the original RoboCop.
Okay.
And just put them in a bar.
Yep.
There's something very, very Verhoeven about this is what Americans look like.
Yeah.
And I love that. Like, it's just such a weird kind of almost loving condemnation.
Sure. Oh, yep. That makes perfect sense. Including like the blonde shirtless dude just dancing away. I'm like, yep. Okay. And I think that's part of what makes this movie so much fun to watch, are all these interesting random people you can just see, like, and it just, like, it lends a weird reality to this outsized world, but also it makes it more heightened at the same time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because there's no sense of, like, central Hollywood casting. It's really, you just feel like they just found a bunch of people and they're like, "Hey, you guys want to be in a movie? You get to dance and drink in a bar." They're like, "Yeah." And that's about what it.
Like.
Yeah. And wonderful stuff.
But yeah, no, it's, again, like somehow the movie manages to just chug along so fast.
Yeah.
And it's not doing anything complex. Like, again, I think it's just because the movie's having so much fun with itself that it feels faster than it is.
Yes. I think that's absolutely correct.
But then I think we need to, it's like the, from the point where Dalton, like where Wade gets killed, it does become another movie.
That is the turn. Yeah, very much.
And I'm not sure, I don't like that movie as much.
No, me neither. It's kind of, you kind of need it to wrap the movie up.
Yeah.
Like the tensions between, you know, Wesley and Dalton, like they have to be resolved in one way or another. And the death of Wade Garrett is the thing that like uncorks all the tensions. And then you get, you know, then you get revenge Dalton. Although of course you before that you get his fight to the death with Jimmy, which occurs at a weird spot. Like when I say that this movie makes strange structural choices, it's like it took a standard Western and action movie and then just juggled the elements around.
Yeah.
And for example, one thing you kind of expect in this movie is an early clash, an inciting incident. None of this happens until like the very end.
No.
It's like it's just basically vibes until the last 30 minutes. And then
they spend most of the film just showing you that, like, this is Dalton. This is what we're promising Dalton can do. Here's that happening.
Exactly.
And that's it. That's literally the entire film until the end.
He's at another bar. He comes to Jasper. First, he gets a new car, a second-hand car. and he checks, you know, then he gets some spare tires, then he finds a place to live. It's all the stuff you don't really expect to see.
Yeah.
that they're just taking the time to show you. And it all works because this place is so weird, and because Patrick Swayze is so he's just charismatic and fun as hell.
You know what? Structurally, thinking of it, I just made a connection I've never made before about this film.
Please do. Tell me.
Shaun of the Dead.
Shaun of the Dead?
Yeah. The way Edgar Wright subverts all of the expectations, like the whole, like, here's the, you know, like the badass action hero getting ready, quick montage, like putting on the boots, right? Whatever. But it's just like Shaun washing up.
Yes.
It's the same thing as like the, and here's Dalton buying spare tires. Like, it's this, they're both just subverting the genres they're in and spending most of their time just going, yeah, people just got to kind of go from one day to the next. Don't worry about it.
I like that. I mean, it's more deliberate and comedic in Shaun of the Dead.
Yes.
Like, even more so than this.
100%.
Yeah. And the other thing it does for me is everything about what Dalton does tells you that this is his entire life.
Yeah.
That he knows exactly, like, what to do. Even though he thinks that, like, driving a car is safer than flying in a plane. Whatever, dude.
I don't like to fly. I get it.
Well, yeah, I get it. But he says it's safer, and it's like, no.
I think he just says it's safer as a joke. I think he just doesn't like planes.
Yeah, fair enough.
But he also doesn't want to say, I don't like planes.
I don't, that's right. Yes, although I got to admit the dialogue in this movie is extremely funny, and it's hard to know what to take seriously. So,
yeah,
even when he's really like angry, like when he's screaming at like Garrett from across the river, he's like, Garrett, fuck you.
Well, and that's it's like when you first hear the Garrett, you expect like something meaningful, right? Like,
yeah, I'm coming for you.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like, you know, you'll pay for this, but it's just like a fuck you.
Yeah.
But again, this is the same film.
Garrett
doesn't want, like, for some, like, we never see him drink, first of all. I have theories about this.
Okay.
Never see him drink, and we see him turn down pain meds.
Right.
That speaks to something.
Yeah. Although he does seem to like, we don't see him drink from a beer, but we do see him like
with an empty beer bottle.
With an empty beer bottle, but yeah, we never actually see him drink, and we see him order coffee, etc. So it's clearly like maybe he's a recovering alcoholic.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Or a drug user, just because of the whole, I don't want the drug. But the whole pain don't hurt. Like, I have heard that line since the first time I saw this movie, way back around the time it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And even if like a Zen cone, I've never quite understood that line. And I mean, I do. I get what they're going for. You know, like, pain is just a state of mind.
Right. But he
doesn't say that. He just says pain don't hurt. And I'm like, no, by definition, actually, yes. if it doesn't hurt, then it's not pain.
Yes.
So now we have autonomism because, well, pain does hurt.
Yeah, it's almost like saying heat ain't hot.
Right.
Or something. Yeah.
Right. And it's like there's something deeper that he means to say,
mm-hmm.
but he doesn't. And again, it just encapsulates the entire film for me.
Yeah. I transcend the laws of physics. I transcend definition and meaning. Just stitch me up. And actually, he flinches when she's like stapling his wound together. I'm like, pain does hurt, buddy.
Right.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, that's there is something about like that that phrase. I know exactly what you mean, and I think its genius lies in the fact that it is so. That it basically contradicts the very definition of pain.
Yeah. No, it only works because it doesn't work.
Yes, that's it. Which I think is a mantra for this movie.
Yep.
And the
agreed.
Agreed. And everybody can get like beaten to hell and like slammed with furniture and just come back the next day. But eventually you get a knife in your chest and that's it for you. Also, how many times does Brad Wesley gets shot with like shotgun pellets and keep on getting up. Amazing.
It's enough to make you think that maybe he actually had a point about wanting to fight Dalton.
Yeah, maybe. Just sheer will. Just sheer evil will.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going to get you. I'm going to put a J.C. Penney in your chest, he says. I don't know. That's his term for bullets.
Right.
Is what I'm saying. Other great moments or things that struck me. Wondering how much Tillman used to spend on furniture for the bar, because it seemed
this
like
why he did. This is why he was willing to pay all this money to Dalton,
right?
Because it was still cheaper.
It was, yes, cheaper to like spend $500 a night on Dalton plus medical expenses,
yeah,
than to keep on buying new bar furniture after every single bar fight, which seemed to be pretty much every night.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. Yeah, when people are like, the bad guys aren't just like bad, they are just hair trigger evil.
It's just it's such a weirdly entertaining movie though.
Definitely. You want to know what my other favorite line is besides the iconic pain don't hurt?
Yeah, hit me.
You're too stupid to have a good time.
That is a great line.
It is delightful. And also, there's the way that Swayze delivers it, almost like in Red Dawn when he says, because we live here. But he has the exact same, like, pinched, like, exasperated delivery, which is, you're too stupid to have a good time. He's had it with this guy and the glimmering blade in his right boot. Awesome.
Yeah.
That good special effect on the blade. That little sort of...
Oh, that little glint.
The little glint. Thank you. The glint, yes. Even better than anything we saw in Willow, I would hazard to say.
Huh.
Well, maybe not. But yeah, I just got a kick out of that. Like, it shows you, like, the blade, and they're like, maybe we need to put a little glint on this so we're absolutely sure people can see this blade.
Yeah.
And yeah.
One of my other favorite lines, personally,
mm-hmm.
Call me sir is like putting an elevator in an outhouse. It don't belong.
Don't belong. That's...
I just like it because I feel like they had to put that line in because A, it goes, this guy probably still has an outhouse. At B, he knows what elevators are. Like, they were just hinting at like the sequel where we find out that he was a time traveler.
Yep. That's maybe he comes from a future where they've got like really fancy multi-storied outhouses with elevators.
Yeah.
Don't belong. Except in the year 2289. No reason why I would know this. All right, moving on.
Except on Voyager. What?
Oh, very nice. Odo, is that you? Anyway. Yes. Although he kind of does look like he'd show up in like a holodeck on, you know, in Star Trek.
Well, that's the end of that's the extended cut. It's the end of the movie's Riker walking out.
Oh my god. He's limping out. He's like, you know what? Pain does hurt.
Right.
And then everybody laughs and it freeze frames. Da 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 da.
Da-da-da-da.
So yes. Oh yeah, this is all very good.
Anyway.
Another thing. I love, yeah. This is the point of the movie where you just gotta start talking about moments that you loved. When Patrick Swayze pushes the polar bear onto Tinker. Right, this is the moment in which, you know, Tinker is trying to find Swayze, right. Dalton, and the polar bear starts toppling over very slowly. Tinker, instead of like moving aside or going, obviously Dalton is pushing this polar bear on me, Tinker reacts like almost like a man who's had a nightmare, a recurring nightmare about a polar bear falling on him.
Oh, yeah.
And he's got this look like, oh, it's coming true. And then he goes, and then he makes this sort of like sort of clicking, like a cat seeing prey, like, and just, and starts shooting the polar bear as it like slowly, slowly topples on him. I'm like, but what is happening? Just why? Why are you shooting the polar bear? This makes no sense at all. It was like one of the most absurd moments I've ever seen in the movie. God bless this movie.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, well, again, like, take yourself, like, at the end where he watched it happen. He has a gun in his hand.
Right.
And he's just like, after that, Paul, I can't get over it. I'm done.
Yeah, and then he gets up. Fortunately, Tinker, he doesn't even look like he's mussed up. He just sort of, no. He's clearly had time to go and again, change his shirt.
If you watch the 3.5-hour version, I'm willing to bet you there's some Tinker backstory that we're not taking into account.
I hope so. I hope there's like a long monologue when he talks about visiting the Arctic and being stalked by a polar bear for days.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Anyway, I think we are pretty much out of Roadhouse.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But we'll be back next week with an actual Western.
Ooh, yes.
So we're going to come back and talk about some Tombstone.
Palm Beach.
Back on the Malcomer train for a little bit.
Ooh.
Until then, we'll cue some music. Woo, music.
I used to fuck guys like you in prison. Da da da. Fame.